All righty, hour number two of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Coming up in about 15 minutes or so, Eddie Olczyk will be on the call for Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final tonight. He will spend a segment with us. Real quickly, because there's been more to come out on this whole Tyrese Haliburton stuff. We played you some audio earlier in the show after the game of Rick Carlisle and Tyrese Haliburton talking about his injury. Shams Charania just had this. This is the latest. Indiana Pacers star Tyrese Haliburton is believed to have suffered a strained right calf and will undergo an MRI to determine the severity of the strain, sources tell ESPN. So down 3-2, Tyrese Haliburton spending today going through an MRI process to determine the severity of the strain, and you have game number 6 approaching on Thursday night, and you also had a little bit from Shams Charania. We'll play the audio coming up in a bit. Sam's chopping it up right now. But one of the quotes that is emerging, once the Pacers and Haliburton get the results back on this MRI, on the calf strain, they're going to be able to identify the severity and then huddle and map out exactly what the plan will be going into game 6. So will he play? I would still think that he's going to. But last night you saw how inefficient he was. So how bad is that actually? If the results come back and they are not good, I know that this is game 6 of the NBA Finals. He wants to be out there on the court and he wants to play. And he even just said so, that he's going to be good and all that stuff after the game last night. Maybe Rick Carlisle says in a weird way, maybe we're better without him, because if he's going to go 0-6 from the field and give you, what, 7 assists and 4 rebounds, or whatever the numbers were in the game last night, I don't know how productive that is. And a lot of people like myself thought that Rick Carlisle was too loyal to Tyrese Haliburton, especially when the game got close last night. I understand how difficult of a conversation it is. But right now, Tyrese Haliburton is going through an MRI process, and we're going to see the severity of what they believe is a calf strain and what's going to be happening moving forward with this. So it is. We have the audio. All right, let's do this. Malika Andrews and Shams Charania on ESPN just a few moments ago talking about the latest with Tyrese Haliburton.
The belief is that Tyrese Haliburton has strained his right calf, and I'm told he will undergo an MRI to determine the exact severity of this strain. And remember, this is the same leg that he had ankle soreness in last week. He was adamant after Game 5 that he would be playing in Thursday's Game 6 of the NBA Finals. It is the NBA Finals, but it was described to me today that if this were the regular season, or even the first round, there's doubt that he would play. So once the Pacers and Haliburton get the results back on this MRI, on that calf strain, they're going to be able to identify the severity and then huddle and map out exactly what the plan will be going into game 6.
I'm not saying this is this, but this is something that just triggered into my brain. Remember when KD had a calf strain with the Warriors? I just saw Samter shake. Because you know exactly what happened after that. He ruptured his Achilles. But that was originally a calf strain. And Bob Myers has talked about it. And Bob Myers remembers, right? Remember how emotional he was. Because KD played through that calf strain. And he returned and ultimately ruptured his Achilles tendon. Now, Tyrese Haliburton has had a remarkable run this postseason. Remarkable. He has given memories and moments that will last a lifetime, even if they don't come back to win the championship. And we've seen the stupid stat after stupid stat and the history that he has authored this postseason. But a few moments ago, I just said, you know what? I'm probably thinking that he'll end up playing. When you actually hear the audio, though, and you hear that he suffered a calf strain, we got to see the severity of that. Because if it's one thing, it could be mild, but mild could turn into serious, and then God forbid in game 6, if he just doesn't have it and he ruptures his Achilles tendon and this is a KD situation, then he's out all of next year. All of next year. So I know it's easy probably like how I just said, oh, he's got to play, he's got to play, he's got to play. I do understand that this is an intense situation and this is a difficult decision. I think most people just gloss over it. Oh, it's the NBA Finals, trying to stave off elimination. Just go, 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 and you'll heal up. Well, sometimes you go, 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 and then you suffer a further injury, and then you're out for all of next season. So that's just something in my sports brain that I have where I remember the KD part. And when you hear about a calf strain and determine the severity, well, KD did in 2019, played through that calf strain, and then he ruptured his Achilles tendon and he was out all of the next following season. That's just something to store in the back of your cabeza. So I guess we will now have to wait and see if Tyrese Haliburton is going to play. That will probably be a big part of tomorrow's show, I'd imagine. Because you're off today. You're off. Today's usually spent reacting to the game. Then tomorrow there's another off day. And then you have Thursday come around and you're trying to find a way to extend the series and get it back to OKC for Sunday for a game 7. So now the status and the results of that MRI are going to be huge. And we'll wait to see further information. And you know that information is going to be coming from one man and one man only, and that's Shams Charania. With now Woj at St. Bonaventure and out of the insider game, Shams is the man when it comes to breaking all this news. All righty, let's get to Diego Pavia, the quarterback at Vanderbilt. He was on with Bussin' with the Boys. That is Taylor Lewan and also Will Compton. This is Diego Pavia when talking about a potential transfer after the season he just had at Vandy this past year. And this was the whole process that ended up happening. Obviously, he's back now with Vanderbilt.
Was there a dollar amount that you heard that was like, holy?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm supposed to share, but like anywhere from like 4 to 4.5.
To leave and go somewhere else.
To leave.
What conference?
SEC.
Any Big Ten teams trying to get you?
You want to play with the best. You don't want to play with the Big Ten.
Some cats, man.
You ignore those calls.
The last two national titles.
I know.
Your era.
You ignore those calls. You know that. The Big Ten, you have like Ohio State, Oregon, Michigan, Penn State. So like you really only have 4 games a year. Like the SEC, it's like week after week after, like you're going to get beat on. Like the Big Ten, you ain't going to get beat on with like the Purdue, Nebraska.
You can nod all you want. Like that's a bullshit comment.
So you got to remember the dynamic of the show that he's on. He's getting interviewed by Taylor Lewan. Where did Taylor Lewan play his college football? Michigan. He's getting interviewed by Will Compton. Where did Will Compton play his college ball? Nebraska. Well, Michigan just won a national championship 2 years ago. And this is going to be an interesting season for Nebraska. They finally got bowl eligibility for the first time in a while last year, and they ended up winning that Pinstripe Bowl. And now this year, you have another year of Dylan Raiola, who is supposed to be a star quarterback. So could that be a little good nature ribbing right there by Diego Pavia? Yes. It will get aggregated, though, without that context. Now, with that being said, I disagree with what he's saying. And trust me, I love the SEC. I have been accused at times of being an SEC honk, even though I root for more teams in the Big Ten. But I love college football. I do. And do I think the SEC right now entering this season could say that they are the best conference in college football? They could say it, but it's not truthful heading into this season. It doesn't mean that the SEC sucks. It doesn't mean that the SEC is miles and miles and miles and miles behind the Big Ten. It's not. The last 2 years, and really ever since NIL came into the picture, this has been a giant game of tug of war. For decades, for years, it was the SEC and everybody else, right? The SEC ran college football. Really, the last few years, not only has the Big Ten closed the gap, not only has the Big Ten been on the same level as the SEC, the Big Ten the last 2 years has been better. And I know you could sit there and tell me from top to bottom, right, the SEC is better and all that stuff. The last 2 years, the Big Ten won the national championship. Michigan and Ohio State. So Diego Pavia, if Ohio State calls you, would you really hang up the phone on them? If Oregon called you, would you really hang up the phone on them? So that's making me think that the Big Ten schools that were calling were not the creme de la creme Big Ten schools for Diego Pavia. That's just my line of thinking. But I don't think it's crazy to say whatsoever. And I think it's the first time you could say in a long time that after the Big Ten has won back-to-back national championships and Michigan got that party started and then Ohio State followed up on it, that the Big Ten entering this season has a slight edge over the SEC. Now, this is not me saying that for the next decade the Big Ten is going to be better than the SEC, but this is going to be a constant game of tug-of-war. And the last 2 years, the Big Ten has won the game of tug-of-war. So this idea that the Big Ten is trash from top to bottom and the SEC is that much better, it's just not that true. And I understand, right, this past year, you saw Vanderbilt beat Alabama. I understand you saw Oklahoma, who did not have a wonderful season, that they ended up beating Alabama. But just because those happens in a few situations doesn't mean that the SEC is leaps and bounds better than the Big Ten. You look at it last year, and I know these meetings are going on right now, and the SEC is trying to push strength of schedule to be factored more into the College Football Playoff Committee and all that stuff. But let's just do this. Last year, the best team in the SEC, I know Georgia ended up winning the conference, but you had Texas finish with a 13-3 record. Georgia was 11-3. Tennessee was 10-3. Alabama was 9-4. LSU was 9-4. South Carolina was 9-4. A&M was 8-5. You had Ole Miss and Missouri both have 10-win seasons. They were 10-3. Florida was 8-5. Arkansas 7-6. Vanderbilt 7-6. Oklahoma 6-7. Auburn 5-7. Kentucky 4-8. Mississippi State 2-10. So yes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 teams were, or no, 13 teams were bowl eligible in the SEC. It's a heck of a number. Now, let's look at the Big Ten. The Big Ten, I'm just doing this off just clicking, so maybe I'm wrong here. Oregon 13-1, Indiana 11-2, Penn State 13-3, Ohio State 14-2, Illinois 10-3, Iowa 8-5, Michigan 8-5, Minnesota 8-5, USC 7-6, Rutgers 7-6, and then yeah, it got ugly. Washington 6-7, UCLA 5-7, Nebraska was 7-6, Michigan State 5-7, Wisconsin 5-7, Northwestern 4-8, Maryland 4-8, and Purdue was 1-11. So sure, you look at that, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Northwestern, Maryland, Purdue, they didn't hold up their end of the bargain. But you still had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 teams that were bowl eligible in the Big Ten. So did it get a little ugly towards the bottom for the Big Ten when you get to the bottom three? Yeah, because of Purdue. That's pretty much the big outlier. It was Purdue. You didn't have a one-win team. You didn't have a one-win team in the SEC. So I get that, if that's where you want to put in the conversation. But you did have some teams in the SEC that were 4-5 wins. So, well, Mississippi State was 2-10. So it's basically the same thing. We're talking about the difference of one win, actually, when you look at this. One win. So they are pretty much similar. So you have identical conferences in terms of the win-loss record for the most part. Right, you got a few teams that are 4-5 wins, got one team that was 2-1 wins, and then everyone else is 7-9, double digits, right, and competing for a national championship when you get into those double digits. Well, the last 2 years, the Big Ten won the national championship. The SEC did it. That, to me, I think, is the difference. That's a tiebreaker. It's not me saying the SEC is trash. I love the SEC. I love it. Love the SEC. But the last 2 years, the Big Ten could say that for the first time in forever that they're the better conference because they won the last two national championships. Now, one more on this because I know we got to break and get to Eddie Olczyk. With all this debate, if I was doing the college football playoff and it's going to 16, which I'm against, but that's what it's going to be, I would do the 5-11 format to be clear. And if they want to put strength to schedule as an emphasis, you could do that. I don't think it's necessary. But more importantly, the format I would like to see implemented is there be 9 SEC conference games. Right? 9 Big Ten games. Then also, Brian Kelly was talking about this. You add one Big Ten up against SEC game in the calendar. So that gets you the 10. And then you go play 2 cupcake U's if you want to get to the final 2 games of the regular season to get you to 12. And then let's have the Big Ten up against the SEC every year. And that would make for greatness. And also, this even adds more fuel to the fire. Ohio State, Texas, which is now SEC Big Ten to open up the college football season. Going to be fun. Going to be fun. Eddie Olczyk joins us next. This is Zach Gelb Show right here on the Infinity Sports Network. All righty, we continue. This is Zach Gelb Show coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. The Edmonton Oilers try to stave off elimination tonight. If they fail to do so, well, then the Florida Panthers will hoist the Stanley Cup for the second year in a row in their home building. Let's go out to the guest line right now and welcome in the very talented Eddie Olczyk, who, of course, will be on the call tonight, NHL on TNT and TNT's coverage. The Stanley Cup final has been absolutely sensational. Edzo, appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this. How you been?
I've been all right, Zach. We're gaining our air miles here with this trip between South Florida and Edmonton, Alberta. But it's been great theater. You know, for the most part, every game has been, you know, super competitive. You know, I know we've had a couple of games, you know, get out of hand, so to speak. But it's been great to be a part of, and we're looking forward to obviously a huge game tonight in the Stanley Cup. Anytime the Stanley Cup's in the building, you know that we're on the verge of something pretty special. So regardless if it's tonight or Game 7 back in Edmonton on Friday, we're expecting a really good game, and I would expect a pushback from Edmonton. They did get off to a good start in Game 5, Zach, back in Edmonton, but I just think that the quick turnaround, I touched on that early in the series, that I thought that could be a pivotal time where, you know, you played on a Thursday night down here for Game 4 in South Florida, and then you traveled on that Friday, and then you played at 6 o'clock local time, so it was a quick turnaround for both teams, and, you know, in Florida pretty much took control of the game. I thought Edmonton just did not have their legs. I thought that the quick turnaround affected them just with their skating legs way more than Florida, and that's why the Panthers have a chance to win the Stanley Cup tonight at home.
Do you think it's the right call tonight to go back to Skinner for the Oilers?
Yeah, 100%. Pickard came in, did what you wanted him to do in Game 4 when they were down. They weren't down 3-0 because of the goaltender. I mean, Stuart Skinner didn't get much help, and you know, a lot of the players, and particularly Leon Draisaitl, made mention this morning that, you know, they didn't do their job. You know, Stuart Skinner did, and, you know, they just, you know, it was one of those periods, and I think it was a good move by Chris Knobloch, the head coach of the Oilers, to take Skinner out and try to change the momentum, and he did, and they won the game, and, you know, all of a sudden it's the best of three. So, you know, Pickard, I didn't like a couple of the goals that he gave up in that Game 5 loss, and, you know, Skinner's had a good playoff, and, you know, he's played in these type of games. I remember last year being down 3-0 and got him to a Game 7 and eventually lost right here in South Florida. So I do agree with it. I mean, we talked about it in our broadcast, myself, Kenny Albert, Brian Boucher, late in the Game 5 in Edmonton, and, you know, I think both Bush and I agreed that, you know, Skinner would, you know, would get the call. He does, and now he gets an opportunity. So I think for Edmonton, Zach, they'd love to get the lead in the first period. You know, I mean, they've been chasing, and it's so tough to play in this league, let alone, you know, when you're falling behind. And even though you have, you know, the best player in the world right now in Connor McDavid, and some may argue the second best player in Leon Draisaitl, it's just tough to chase the game. So they're looking to be even or ahead after the first period. And if they do, they feel like they can give themselves a chance to get to a Game 7 on Friday.
Talking Eddie Olczyk, you know, I was asked before this series, and full disclosure, I picked the Panthers, but people asked me, if you were to make the case, what's different with this Oilers team this year compared to last year? The two reasons I gave a lot of people was I thought Skinner was playing at a better level, and also they had the home ice. What has surprised you more, that the goalie has still been a conversation, or that Edmonton wasn't able to protect home ice this go around so far?
I mean, I would say both. I mean, I think there was still a question mark, even though Skinner looked like he had gone to another level, is just, could he keep it up there at that level? I mean, you go back to round one, you know, against LA. I mean, if you're a fan of the LA Kings or the Toronto Maple Leafs right now, you're probably just shaking your head, considering that both of those teams at different points in the playoffs had the Edmonton Oilers, that being the LA Kings, and the Toronto Maple Leafs, that being the Florida Panthers, had them up 2-0 in their series that they were playing against them. And they were up in Game 3, and they had both teams over a barrel and were not able to win that Game 3, and the tide just turned in both series. So, you know, Pickard came in against LA, and he did a hell of a job, and, you know, he won, what, 6 games in a row, and then he got hurt, and then Skinner comes in, and, you know, and he does what he needs to do. So it's the ultimate team game. But I think for Edmonton, I mean, you know, every team is banged up. There is no doubt. You got guys banged up on Florida. You got guys that are banged up on Edmonton. I mean, no Zach Hyman really, really, really has shown in this series Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, I give the guy a lot of credit. I mean, he's finding a way to play. Thought he had a very good game four, but he is banged up as well. And when you do go to Draisaitl and McDavid on the same line, Zach, you're really going top-heavy because you don't have Hyman anymore, and Nugent-Hopkins is, you know, he's lucky if he's 50%, if he's that. So it's a interesting dilemma when they Chris Knobloch, the coach of the Oilers, decides to load up or he keeps them apart. And, you know, all it takes is that one shift to kind of change the tide and what have you. But I think for Edmonton, the home ice to me, it did matter to me. I think Florida is, you know, I mean, they're on a roll. They got, what, 10 road wins now, I believe, in these playoffs.
They could win on Mars, let's be real, right?
Yeah. To me, it really didn't matter. And then as far as the goaltending aspect of it, if you're doing, the check marks there, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt going to this final. I mean, Sergei Bobrovsky would get that check mark. But give Skinner credit. He's bounced back when needed over the course of the last couple of years. He's battle-tested and battle-ready, and we'll see if he can put a performance on tonight in Game 6.
Now, I'm not giving you a biz take here and talking about the no state income tax, but I thought it should have been illegal that the Panthers, Edzo, were able to acquire Brad Marchand, because that team is the best team in hockey. I don't care what the standings said right at the deadline. And to get a player like Marchand was just stupid good. 6 goals in these Stanley Cup playoffs. I think most people would have thought that Bennett would have won the Conn Smythe if the Panthers would have won. Is it starting to feel as if this is going to be Marchand's to lose if the Panthers end up hoisting the Stanley Cup tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I think I know there's a lot there, but I'll comment on the Marchand MVP. I think if he has a monster game tonight or in Game 7, he might have an outside chance. So I think Sam Bennett has... I know he's the wagering favorite. I know that. If he gets another goal here in Game 6 or Game 7 and ends up with 16 or 17 goals, I think it would be really hard not to have him be the Conn Smythe Trophy for the MVP of the playoffs. It's not the final, which I believe at some point here, I would like to see, and I know the NBA has a little bit different than the NHL, but I'd like to see a finals MVP, Zach, and you want to call it the Wayne Gretzky Award. I'm all for it. I would, and I'm, you know what? I might even bring that up during the broadcast tonight for the hell of it.
Make sure that you say that you were talking with Zach Gelb while you say that on the broadcast. All right.
I will try to get that in. Then you have your playoff MVP, because it could be two different players and it could be the same player. So for me right now, it's Sam Bennett. But if Marchand happens to have, a couple of large games, then I think, no pun intended, all bets are off on who ends up being the MVP. But I think if Florida wins it, I think it's going to be Bennett. And if Edmonton somehow comes back and finds a way, it's going to be one of two guys. And, Leon Draisaitl's already got two OTGWGs, overtime game-winning goals in the Stanley Cup Final. And if you think Edmonton's going to get back in it, there's a pretty good chance that McDavid and Draisaitl are going to be right in the middle of it for the Oilers.
It's an interesting idea that you brought up, because last year, right, McDavid won the Conn Smythe. And if they would have had a finals just MVP, it probably would have gone to Bobrovsky.
Right.
So 100%. I think that maybe you see that 2 years in a row, maybe Edzo could get some momentum behind that change.
Well, I will try. I mean, usually when I put my ideas in a suggestion box, I think the bottom of the box is open, and mine never really ever get to see the day of light. But I think it'd be interesting. It's almost that argument too in a regular season, Zach. We've talked about this over the last handful of years. It's okay. Well, you have the Norris Trophy given to the best defenseman. And a lot of it is points and offensive driven, but a lot of awards are. You can make the argument for MVP of the National Football League, but I think I'd like to see us expand. I'd like to the best defensive defenseman. Now it could end up being the same guy. I'm okay with that,
mm-hmm.
But I think that for the playoffs for sure, I'd love to see another award. And who better to have a award named after him when it comes to you know, Stanley Cup final play and you know, the legendary Wayne Gretzky, you know, my teammate here at TNT. So we'll see. You know, maybe I'll cross, I'll put that on somebody's desk and see if I get anybody. And look, I know, I mean, I would imagine, and I'm sure that it's, you know, it's been probably chatted about a few hundred times, but really never got any legs. But I think it would be, I think it'd be great for the game. I think it'd be, you know, a lot of positivity, obviously, if you can hang it on, you know, the greatest player's, you know, name, if indeed that's the path the NHL eventually gets to at some point.
Eddie, I'll check out. I'll end you on McDavid, right? Recently, we've seen great players in sports and that quest to win a championship. Aaron Judge just lost in the World Series last year. Right. Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson have had some heartbreaking playoff defeats. We all know he's the best player on the planet, but if he loses back-to-back years in the Stanley Cup final, what do you think the conversation is around McDavid?
Well, I mean, he's still the best player in the world, and, you know, people are going to, you know, when you're hearing conversations of, you know, top 10 all time already and all these kind of things. I mean, look at a lot of, I mean, look how long it took Raymond Bourque to, you know, win a Stanley Cup. Eventually it was a 21, 22 years. He left Boston, ended up in Colorado and won a Stanley Cup. I understand, where people will, you know, question. You do got to win. I mean, you do. Yeah. And I think it's just a matter of time for Connor McDavid. I mean, they've, you know, they're here, and obviously a very large reason why is because of himself. But that's just, it, like you said, there are great players that have played in many sports and have never gotten the opportunity to get to the top of the mountain, and obviously can't get any closer than last year. And then here he is, you know, and the Oilers now back and playing the same team. And here they're in a must-win situation in Game 6. So at some point he's going to win. Now, whether it's in Edmonton or not moving forward, I mean, who knows? His contract's up after next year. You know, will he stay in Edmonton? Will he eventually leave? I mean, that's for another conversation. But I get it. But he's still, you know, right now there's no doubt he is the best player in the world. And we'll see how it all plays out, you know, going into and post game 6, and we'll see if we have a game 7 back in Edmonton on Friday.
You brought it up, and Liam McHugh was on with us last week, and he said something similar about his future. And I never really thought, just because of Crosby and Ovechkin and how great they are and how they've always stayed, McDavid leaving Edmonton, but there's 1 year left on the contract. Where do you think the percentages are that he's going to sign a long-term extension there again?
Yeah, I would not even want to try to speculate. I mean, you know, until he signed, this conversation was about with Austin Matthews, you know, a couple of years ago when he was, which is really hard to believe that he was an unrestricted free agent at 26. I still can't believe that he even hit unrestricted free agency at 26. But again, that's for another conversation. It'd be really interesting. Like, if you just assume, because Leon Draisaitl signed his, you know, his 8-year extension last year, I believe, and, you know, and he's going to be there for, you know, you would assume the duration of that, you know, you would assume that McDavid would do the same thing. But until somebody signs on a dotted line and you know, the salary cap is going up. So if you're Connor McDavid, and I'm just thinking about, you know, the contractual part of this, Zach, is if he thinks or his team feels like, okay, you know, the salary cap is going up and a max contract in the NHL with a hard salary cap, he's probably going to get in that 19-ish range, which is the max of the salary cap, 19 to 20 million. He sits there and goes, okay, well, 3 or 4 years from now, that might be the cap, you know, might be $25 million for the highest paid player. So, you know, why sign an 8-year deal at $20 million a year where maybe I can sign a 4-year deal for $20 million. And then once I get to that fifth year, and if he likes it there, then he can go and make $25 million. So I think it's just, you know, I mean, the guy doesn't have to bet on himself, because it doesn't matter what happens. If he stays in Edmonton, where he's going to get the max. I mean, we know that he will be the only player that gets the mask. Max, at least right now, the way the cap is going up and whatever, to be in that $19 to $20 million range. So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. And I know everybody's eyes will be on Edmonton starting after July 1st, because that's when they can sign him. And we'll see. He holds the cards.
Well, everyone's up.
If he wants to play it out, Zach, he will. If he doesn't, you know, I would assume he would sign very quickly. The only thing I will say is I believe, and I kind of alluded to it, I believe is if he does sign, I think it'll be a shorter-term deal than a, you know, a max deal as far as term. Money-wise, he's going to get the max, like I said, $19, $20 million. That's already, I mean, that's a done deal. It's like, okay, this is as much as we can give you. This is what you're going to get. But I would look to the amount of years that it ends up being for, and then we can have another conversation after that.
Well, everyone's eyes are going to be on the Panthers and the Oilers tonight in Game 6, and they'll be watching on the NHL on TNT. That, of course, is Eddie Olczyk, who will be on the call. Edzo, really appreciate the time. Thank you.
Okay, Zach, be well.
So there you go. Eddie Olczyk joining us. Brad Marchand making a case for the Conn Smythe. Sam Bennett still the betting favorite. And last year you saw the Panthers win the Cup, but the Conn Smythe go to Connor McDavid. So Eddie Olczyk brought it up on this show. He thinks that the NHL should just create an MVP trophy for just the Stanley Cup final. And then you could also award still the Conn Smythe for the entirety of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And he thinks that they should name it after Wayne Gretzky. And he's going to bring that up, I guess, on the broadcast tonight. And when he does, you know, he did promise that he would say, oh, I was talking about buddy Zach Gelb on the Infinity Sports Network. And I had this idea to him. So let's see if Eddie Olczyk does that tonight. That'd be good. We always love Edzo whenever he's talking pucks or even sometimes ponies with us right here on the Infinity Sports Network. We will take a break. Ack, I know you're a big hockey guy tonight. What do you think? Are we getting to Game 7? Do you think this is over in 6?
I'd like to think we are getting a Game 7. I'm worried about the Oilers in goal. They have a major goaltending problem. Maybe Stuart Skinner can, you know, get the resolve and pull one out tonight. I'd love to see it go 7. I in my gut, I want to say yes, but I'm nervous to make that proclamation.
I just can't pick against the Panthers. I know you're saying that you're not picking against the Panthers the entire way, but if you ask me just tonight, am I going Panthers or the Oilers? The Panthers have been the better team. McDavid needs to have a huge moment tonight, but also, like you said, they're going back to Skinner, maybe back up against the wall. He comes out firing and forces a Game 7. I'm still not betting against the other guy on the other end of the ice in this matchup in Sergei Bobrovsky.
You know, sometimes when teams are spent, I think it's tough. I think the extra travel day helps the Oilers. I think, you know, they bond together. I think being on the road sometimes is a blessing for these teams. Yeah. So wouldn't surprise me at all if we go 7.
You know what I also think in a weird way? Last year, they were talking to Paul Maurice today. And someone asked him, well, how does it feel waking up today knowing you can win the Stanley Cup? And in Paul Maurice fashion, he goes,
four times last year.
You asked me that question 4 times last year. I think that could actually help the Panthers tonight. Now, some people could argue, oh, the Oilers, they were down 3-0. Now you only got to win 2 games in a row back-to-back to go win the Cup, easier than what happened last year. I don't think the Panthers need a heightened awareness when you're in this moment, but knowing what it went through last year, maybe they don't play around with their food this time.
Also, I think they have controlled the tempo of the series throughout, even in the games they lost.
Both overtime.
I still think they have been the better team. Let's hope we get a Game 7. It's been good for everybody.
All righty, we will take a break. When we come back yesterday, Ack did tell us on the air while it was happening. He was on the air for it. Gage Wood threw a no-hitter in the World Series, the College World Series, with 19 strikeouts. Not what was the best series performance, just individual performance, regular season, postseason, doesn't matter. What's some of the better individual performances, single-game performance that you see in the history of sports? We'll relive some of those when we come on back. Update time first. Here's Ack. And this portion of the show is brought to you by Wesley Financial. Stuck in a timeshare and want out? Contact the Wesley Financial Group now and get a free timeshare exit information kit at wesleyfinancialgroup.com. Let's listen up. This was audio yesterday from the College World Series, and this was actually Gage Wood afterwards who thanked his parents following his College World Series no-hitter. He had 19 strikeouts as Arkansas was able to get the victory yesterday. Here's Gage Wood.
You know, they sacrificed a lot of time and money and everything to take me all over the country to play baseball. You know, and I can't thank them enough. And even my high school coaches that are here right now and my high school strength coach, I wouldn't be where I am today without Price Holmes.
So let's go around the room here. Greatest individual or an individual performance that you will always remember. What is one? Just a single game, not, oh, this guy had 7 awesome games and won 4 of them and won a championship. Just one moment, one game. What was that for you? We'll start with Stu.
All right, so this one was before I was born, but I see the number and it wows me every time I see it. 1990, Derek Thomas of the Chiefs, 7 sacks in a single game. So that, I mean, for, you know, 7 sacks in a season is a pretty good season for a lot of guys, but having 7 in one game, and by the way, the Chiefs still lost that game despite the 7 sacks. They lost 17-16 to the Seahawks.
Still loves the most. You know, yeah. a Chief losing at a spot like that. You weren't born in 1990?
No, 91.
Huh.
I just missed this by a year.
Yeah, well, I don't even think even if you were born a year earlier that you would have remembered it either.
No, probably not.
Yeah. I don't think Stu was in diapers watching Derek Thomas have 7 sacks at a game. So I created a list here. I was very Samter-y today. And Derek Thomas's 7 sack performance was on my list. So since Stu used that, I will cross it off. There are 2 others that are on my list before the one that I will actually give. But let's see how many Samter's going to cross off for us, because we know Samter always has a list here.
No, I don't.
You don't have a list today?
I've stopped making lists, and now that I know that you made a list, I'm not going to...
You son of a bitch! Listen, no, seriously, I was sitting there, and I was... It was funny. See, I should have communicated this to you. I was about to text Samter, I actually want a list from you today.
Okay.
And I said to myself, oh, I don't need to do that. I just assumed that you were going to give us a list. So I didn't end up having that. So what'd you end up picking?
Okay, so I have a few others. I can make a list. So one that stands out to me, and this is a name that doesn't resonate with a lot of people, Flipper Anderson. 1989 had 336 receiving yards in a game.
Wow.
1989, the record still stands. Considering how we've gone into the progression of passing.
What was the number?
336.
Yeah, pretty tough to top.
Calvin Johnson came close in 2013 with 329, but since 1989, Flipper freaking Anderson.
Right? That doesn't sound like a real name.
I know, right? Los Angeles Rams. You can also go Adrian Peterson's 296 rushing yards in a single game. There's also Jim Hardy, who threw 8 interceptions in a single game. Which
I don't think that was the impressive that we were looking for, but that is impressive.
It is something. The one I was going to go with, though, was back in 1999 on April 23rd. Forget about most impressive single game moment. This is a single inning moment where Fernando Tatis hit grand slams in the same inning. 2 grand slams in the same freaking inning. So that, to me, is the one record that will never get broken or even tied.
It was funny because the 2 I was debating, I'll give you the one that I'm going to give you in just a second. But I did have Fernando Tatis, excuse me. I think when I typed this in and autocorrected and put a junior there. But Fernando Tatis, I said, forget about the entire, I have this note written right here. Forget about the entirety of the game. Just how about in one inning where he had 2 grand slams. So there we go. Good job by Samter. Don Larson, this is not the one I'm going with, but a perfect game in a World Series. That's pretty stupid if you think about it. The one I am going with, though, is Will Chamberlain. 100 points in an NBA game.
Allegedly.
No, it happened. Stop. Don't be one of those people. Who are you? Tyler Hero, history doesn't exist? Is that who you are? Did you hear that gem of a quote yesterday?
Aside from him holding up a sign, there is no evidence that it actually happened.
Okay, well, I'm going Will Chamberlain, 100 points. And you should love that. I was up against the Knicks. You should love that, Mr. Nick Hader. Right?
All right, I'll give you a pass. I retract my statement. It happened. I was there.
Yeah, but 100 points in a game is just stupid. It's crazy. And people listening, if I say something stupid, I mean it's good. You know, sometimes people are like, oh, what do you say that guy's stupid? No. Will Chamberlain scored 100 points in a game is stupid good. Just a clap.
So all those times you've called me stupid, that was a compliment?
I don't think I've ever said good after that. All righty. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Oh, one of our favorites. Mike in Abilene, Texas on the line, and he wants to chime in on the superstar conversation regarding Tyrese Haliburton. Hello, Mike.
I'm probably best on the air. Thanks for taking my call.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Go ahead.
Answer the dispatch. I'm not going to bore you guys with Buckeye stuff yet. We're still a little ways from that. I'll give y'all a break.
Well, Diego Pavia the other day, Diego Pavia, Mike, he said that the Big Ten is basically a pimple on his you-know-what, and the SEC is still the best conference. You hear that?
I saw that. I like it. I do like it because, I mean, if we're going to talk the Big Ten, I think it's pretty much accurate outside from us and Michigan the past couple years. It's just not a lot of, we got some talent, but team-wise, record-wise, we don't really play well in the bowl games necessarily apart from us. So I wouldn't say we're weak. I think we destroy the Big 12 in any other conference, but I'm fine to see the SEC still has overall maybe more better teams than Big Ten for sure, but it don't matter who has the better team, it does now, boys. It matters who wins the playoff championship, and right now sitting on that throne is the Buckeyes. And look, here we are. I said I wasn't going to do it to you, and there I did. I did it to you. So sorry about that, but I want to talk about, again, the past 2 weeks, everybody was going on about, is Halliburton a superstar? And I ranted and ranted, and it's not a personal thing. We try to anoint these people in year one, two, three, four. And yes, it's social media. Yes, we have access to these athletes sooner. And so that's kind of part of it as well. But, and I'm not trying to, you know, degrade or take away anything from Halliburton himself. I think he's great. I like my superstars to look a little bit better. And by look, I mean, his shot's kind of ugly. It's not traditional. His form's not very traditional. It's not very pretty, quote unquote. That's just a, you know, a little personal thing. But to have the Pacers where they are, to have them back-to-back conference finals, and now this year in the finals, I think that's great. It's great for the sport. He is not a superstar. Superstars don't go 0-for in the finals. You want to know what superstars do in the finals? Even in a losing effort, they score 51 points and have 8-8 on the stat line. They have 40 points, 13 rebounds, 7 assists, and 3 steals. They have 35.
Mike, I
got
to let you run just
because
I'm up against it, a hard out. Appreciate the phone calls always, but I got to get to the break. He was hurt, and he does have an MRI today. Yes, he needed to be better even while playing hurt last night. That was Mike's opinion 3 weeks ago. His opinion stays true, so I respect it. My argument to start the show was, if you called him a superstar a week ago or 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, to change it in this short amount of time and then after last night say he isn't a superstar, that's something I'm not standing for. But if you consistently had the opinion like Mike's had, he's not a superstar and you still don't want to call him a superstar, fine. But I think people need to be consistent. It can't just flip-flop 3 days ago a superstar and now people say he isn't.